Blog Talk Radio.
We are the heirs of that first revolution.
Will a strong and united America still be a force for freedom and prosperity around the world?
America has created the longest peacetime economic expansion in our history.
We are the heirs of that first revolution.
Good common sense and sound judgment of the American people and their essential love of justice.
Hi, welcome to the Kudzu Vine for August 26, 2012. I'm your host, David McLaughlin, and joining me as always, welcome Tim Shiflett.
Good evening, sir.
And welcome back, Catherine Smith.
Yeah, I'm sorry about last week. It was just kind of a mess on my hand. Anyway, I'm glad to be back.
It happens, and it's okay. That's kind of why we have three. Sometimes it's just because if you invite three and you get two, you can make it through. But that means you'll be well-rested for this week, and that's what's important. And since, Catherine, you're so well-rested, let's talk weather. You know, we never talk about weather on political podcasts, but, of course, weather is huge this Sunday before the RNC convention starts in Tampa Bay, and there's a weather system. I don't know if, I guess, is it tropical storm or is it a hurricane yet that is headed their way, and some reports say that it may be the worst hurricane to hit America since Katrina, and obviously we know how bad that was, and some flooding from Lake Pontchartrain impacted that, some other things, so I don't think it'll be that bad at the end of the day, but it's bad enough, Tim, that they've canceled the first day of the Republican National Convention, and this is the second time in 2 years, although this time it will actually affect the delegates in Tampa, as opposed to being more of, a ceremonial one like last time.
Yeah, and as we were talking about before we went on the air and what they were talking about on the Weather Channel earlier today, the really big problem that those delegates might face is getting around, getting over to the convention site because of flooding, having to cross some inland causeways or whatnot in Tampa, so I hope all those people are very careful down there, and I did want to give a shout-out to two friends of the Kudzu Vine who are en route and probably there by now. Buzz and Charlie are both going down there to report on the convention for Peach Pundit, so guys, if you're listening, you guys be careful down there.
Well, yeah, I'm not Charlie. I saw Charlie on Friday night, and he wasn't too concerned because his tickets are up in the nosebleed section, so he figured that any flooding that happened, he would be well above it.
Although, obviously, the last weather system to hit Atlanta like that was some tornadoes that actually ripped a hole in the Georgia Dome, and that was up near the roof, so it depends on what kind of weather. I don't want to be up there either. And if you're not familiar with the layout of Tampa, St. Petersburg Beach, Tampa's the main is mostly inland. Then you have a body of water. You cross over into St. Petersburg, another city that's roughly the same size, and then you can cross over some more water and go to St. Petersburg Beach. And you have a funny feeling that we're going to be staying in all three of those locations. I mean, if you're just about the political convention, you may stay closer to Tampa. Although, I am not clear on this. Is this being held in Tropicana Field, which is in St. Petersburg, or is this being held in some basketball arena in which an NBA team doesn't play? I guess the Lightning, don't they have that? Which actual facility is this in? Do y'all know, Catherine, Tim?
I'm checking right now.
And
yeah,
I can't,
Tim, I know
check,
you
as you know.
But, yeah, which it's, this is a big contrast for the RNC and the Democratic Convention this year, because while the Democrats will have the early part of the convention, and I guess what's the Bobcats basketball arena, the later part of the convention will be in the outdoor stadium. I wonder if it was ever thought about to say, look, Tampa, we're on a Tampa convention, but the last night we're going to move over to St. Petersburg, have it at Tropicana Field, or would that have messed the baseball team up? Because that stadium sits, I guess 50, 60,000. It's not as big as, say, the one with the pirate ship the Buccaneers play in, Raymond James Stadium. but it would have given him a bigger venue to kind of look like the president's speech will be, which obviously makes it look like a bigger deal, and you would think that's what the Republicans want. Are y'all surprised?
It will be held at the Tampa Bay Times Forum.
And since I'm not a hockey fan, I've never heard of that. So, I guess, you know, yeah, the basketball, if you follow basketball, sometimes you know the basketball arena names.
The Weather Channel did say today that a lot of the delegates would be staying a good distance away from the venue itself. There's the problem, is getting all the delegates to the thing, you know.
Yeah. I mean, and every time I've been to Tampa Bay, and I've been there about three times, we always stay on the beach. Like last time we stayed on St. Petersburg Beach. It's about a 35-minute drive in good weather with no traffic back to Tampa Bay. So I can only imagine what it would be with bad weather. Although that may clear the rest of the roads out if everybody's, you know, fearing that and staying off of them. So logistically, that's going to be a problem. Oh, I also, one thing I need to mention, that in about 5 minutes, we're having a huge guest on this week for the second time from Missouri. Eli Yokley from Politics Mo is coming on. We're going to talk about Missouri politics, and that's just a little bit of an attention getter this week with Todd
a little bit,
and
yeah.
Other things. Just a little bit. So I forgot to mention at the head of the show, since I was going to talk about the convention. A few more things out of the convention. One was today in the Tampa Tribune, Charlie Crist writes this endorsement of President Obama. Now, obviously, we can tell Charlie Crist has been moving further and further away and away from the Republican Party to the Democratic Party. Catherine, how big a deal is this, Charlie Crist endorsing President Obama? I mean, is this something that will move independence more to his column and kind of tarnish the GOP convention in Florida?
Well, I think it does do the latter. I think it does sort of shift the focus a little bit from everything going on in Tampa with the RNC to, you know, something, comments from a, you know, I think he's still relatively well-liked in Florida, right? He had a little rough spot there for a while, but I think he's relatively well-liked.
Yeah, I need to see a pop on him, but I think it's kind of where, obviously, Republicans don't like him, even though he was their governor. But now that he's switched, you know, to become a Democrat, I'm sure he's not popular. And Democrats, it won't matter. They're already with President Obama. It's that swing voter group, even if it's just 10% of the population. If he has influence over that, that could be huge. Right, Tim?
Well, you don't need that big a switch in a state like Florida. Man, 1 or 2% would be gold in that state for either candidate, because I believe Florida this year is a pure, absolute toss-up. I mean, I think the last poll I saw had Romney ahead by 1 point, and it's been something like that down there all year. If Governor Crist can move the needle 1 or 2 points, oh, it would be a blessing for the president's campaign. Might give him the state.
And speaking of polls, I almost want to skip over to something else because it affects every topic we talk about almost, and that's now that you're seeing polls of likely voters and registered voters, and there's that huge gap. I mean, if pretty much everybody that's registered to vote shows up, the president wins big. But
of course,
if it's just the most hardcore voters, he might even be behind. It may be that he wins very, very narrowly. And I almost think a lot of times at this point, people sometimes are like, they're not ready to commit to voting. I mean, honestly, if you would have asked me about the election in Georgia about a month ago, up until a day or two before, are you going to vote? I mean, I was pretty iffy on it. And I'm you know, a very reliable voter, but I was kind of, you know, I don't know. Because obviously it wasn't as big as the presidential election. But I kind of think that some of those people are going to move into the likely voter camp the closer we get to the election. And so some of this might be a little false hope for Romney. Catherine, what do you think of that theory?
I agree with that. I think there's a lot of people who are sort of, I mean, I think there's a lot of people who are not interested, not so engaged in the political process. They don't really think about this until after the conventions and sometimes much later. You know, sometimes people are just waiting for one of the candidates to make a mistake, and then they vote for the other guy. So, yeah, I think that the undecideds and people not likely to vote is gonna firm up. I absolutely agree with you.
Yeah, Tim, make a quick thought on this, and then we'll transition.
Well, I'd say 3 or 4% maybe is what is pure undecideds. And that group that rarely votes, I don't think they're coming out this year. I don't.
Yeah, but it's how big is this? You know, who are these voters that are registered but saying they're not likely to vote? I mean,
they're mostly Democrats. You were right about that. It's no surprise at all. That's been true of voters as long as I can remember. If everybody who's eligible to vote did vote, the Democrats probably wouldn't lose too many elections.
Right. Yeah, and so it'll be interesting to see what that group does, and I think that's going to be one of the key things we watch. Well, let's go ahead now and move over. Our special guest coming on for the second time from Political Mo, welcome Eli Yuckley.
Hey, how are you?
Eli? Doing good. Eli, you know, we had you on. You talked about Missouri politics. It was fascinating, and of course, we would have had you on anyway, but in light of what happened pretty much while we were ending the show last Sunday, we had to have you on. And Eli, I know I could just say two words, a name for you, and we could probably just let you talk and then wrap the show up at 59 after the hour, but we'll probably be a little more structured than that. So let's kind of start. Tell our listeners a little background on Representative Todd Akin. I mean, now we know the comment that he just made, but give us kind of a little history on him.
Right. Well, last time we talked, it was at the height of the primary here in Missouri. There were three Republican candidates. And Todd Akin, the whole time, his big message to Missouri voters is he was the most consistent conservative on the ticket. And, you know, he ran to the right in the primary. And, you know, even Claire McCaskill, the Democratic senator here, ran an ad saying Todd Akin was Missouri's true conservative. So that's been his big play for a really long time. So whenever that comment came out this week, I don't know that it was necessarily shocking to anybody here in this state. You know, it's been pretty clear since day one that Todd Akin would not be the candidate who runs through the middle in this race. He's been a very strong conservative on social issues for a very long time. On spending issues, there's some qualms there. We can get into that later if you'd like. But on social issues, I mean, Todd Akin is probably one of the most socially conservative people in the Congress. And that's been his big ploy. You know, there's Vicki Hartzler here in Missouri. He's another one just like that. They run to the very far right on social issues because that's what they believe. Todd Akin is a deeply religious man. You know, he and his wife are very religious people, and they feel like they've been called to this race. That's what they say whenever you ask them about it. So those comments in that context weren't necessarily shocking to anybody in Missouri, which is why, you know, that's why Claire McCaskill ran an ad basically promoting the guy during the primary.
Yeah, kind of the opponent she wanted. Although I guess I wonder, how is this exactly conservative? I mean, this is just bad science. I mean, this is ignorance. I don't see how that makes you conservative or liberal,
sure,
just to not know the facts.
He's made very clear for a very long time his position against abortion. And the question that he was asked was whether or not he'd support abortion rights in cases of rape. And then that's whenever he went into the bad science. You're exactly right. It is bad science. And he's admitted to that this week. But he is deeply rooted in these conservative beliefs. And that's why he's against abortion rights in cases of rape. And that's kind of the bottom line issue where the Senator McCaskill has latched onto this week. You know, this week she's been very careful. A lot of the Republican establishment in Missouri and nationwide has been trying to push Todd Akin out of this race since last Sunday, whenever he made that comment. Now, Claire McCaskill has been one of the people basically hoping that he stays in this race because she has been, you know, she put a lot of money out. She put an ad up for the guy. And she's been one of the people. You know, in my country, there's been the social conservatives that are supporting him and saying he shouldn't get out of this race. You know, Missouri voters selected him. And that's the exact same thing Claire McCaskill's been saying on the campaign trail because she knows that there's a lot more where this came from Todd Akin. And so do the Republicans, which is why they're saying we need to get this guy out. So it's this interesting battle right now between this inter-party battle right now that Todd Akin's kind of at the center of.
Yeah, well, of course, I could continue to ask you questions about Todd Akin alone, but I'm going to pass it around for to Catherine and Tim to ask questions, and then we'll come back around and maybe get into some other stuff. Catherine's questions for Eli about, you know, Todd Akin and this U.S. Senate race.
Hi, Todd. Thanks so much for being on tonight. We really appreciate it, Eli. So is this tone, this anti-science stand, been come up in other things with him too, like global warming and all these other sort of scientific, the other ways that science policy manifests in the political arena? Has that come up with him as well?
You know, we really haven't talked a lot about those issues on the campaign trail with Todd Akin, maybe surprisingly. You know, a lot of the discussion has been focused on his positions on, like, student loans. He doesn't want federal involvement in student loans or on issues like federal school lunches. This came out last week that he was against, the week before last, he was against federal involvement in school lunches. So a lot of the debate has focused on where he is on spending issues, where, you know, most people don't question whether or not federal, I mean, I don't know, but it seems like a lot of people don't. And that should be a controversial issue, I think, is what most people think. And he stepped in it this last week before his controversial comments came out on the rape issue. So it's just been this, like, progression of negative press that he got for a week straight, and then it was capped last Sunday. This week after his primary, it was capped last Sunday by him making these comments on rape, and this, the National Republicans had enough with it. They experienced candidates who make gaffes. In 2010, they had Sharon Angle, you had Christine O'Donnell. You had candidates like this who the Republicans were really hoping on those races to get control of the Senate that in 2010. They wanted the Senate in 2010, and they thought these races were the ones where they could do it. And, you know, they had these candidates that made gaffes, and it made it tough for these Republicans nationally. And that's why since day one of this scandal, of this gaffe, or whatever you want to call it, Republicans have been trying to push Todd Akin out of this nomination to try to get somebody who is less, who's perhaps more controllable in terms of messaging.
Well, yeah, and it seems like both Akin and his fellow believers, so to speak, have, like, doubled down on it, you know, with Huckabee and...
Akin apologized for the comment. He said he was wrong. He said that he was quoting a book in, like, 1977 or something, several decades ago, that had this, you know, this alleged science in it. He's admitted he was wrong. Mike Huckabee admitted he was wrong. The issue now is whether he can continue damage. And, you know, national Republicans say that this guy is damaged. Look, we had three polls come out this week after the story gets kind of saturated among most people. And in all three of these polls, Claire McCaskill was leading her Republican rival, which is something nobody would have imagined 2 years ago, or two weeks ago. Nobody 2 weeks ago would have thought that Claire McCaskill, right after the Republican primary, would be able to be besting her Republican rival by anything. But certainly, whether the two new polls came out showing 10 points ahead, even if it's 5 points ahead, even if it's 2 points ahead, like the poll that came out today shows. You know,
yeah, well, we've been talking about that Missouri race for weeks. You know, we've been saying, well, you know, it's going to be a late night in November because of Missouri and Virginia. So, you know, we've all, I think there's been a lot of focus on it. And among, you know, sort of us, those of us who are inside baseball. But now it's going to be everyone looking at it. So I'm going to pass this to Tim now before I take up all your time.
Okay. Good evening again, Eli. Thank you for being with us. If Akin had stepped aside, who was the betting money on to replace him on the ballot out there?
Well, that would have been a decision made by the State Republican Committee. And, you know, earlier in the week, both of his former primary opponents, Sarah Steelman and John Bricker, We're calling, we're privately calling members of the state committee, lobbying them for their support. So that started earlier this week. I don't, you know, there were other names like Sid Oser, Tom Schweik, who were being considered. There was a guy, Joanne Emerson, Congressman Emerson, was considered for that as well. But, you know, it was all hinged on Todd Akin getting out of this race. And it looks like he's not going to do that. There's a few weeks, kind of a loophole in state election law where he can still get out if he gets a court order. But right now, this guy looks like he's going to run to November, which is exactly, you know, whenever you talk to Democrats privately, that's exactly what they want. Claire McCaskill won't admit it. I talked to her yesterday, and she kind of laughed off the notion that she was somehow supporting this guy and hoping that he stays in this race, which is understandable, right? I mean, there was a big opportunity there for her, and you know, he's given it to her.
Well, this, I guess I should charitably refer to it as a debacle, but will this debacle of Akin's, do you think, affect other races down ballot in Missouri?
That's the concern. That's the concern, and that's why this week we had like the state committee chairman here for the party was privately telling, you know, they were all urging Todd Akin to get out of this race, because there was an opportunity if Romney won this state significantly, and it looks like he might be able to, if all of these voters, if they could get far enough down the ballot without switching over to the D and stay on the R, you know what I mean? If they pull Romney, McCaskill, or Romney Akin, they could maybe do Spence, who's running for governor, or some of these other candidates. We have five races statewide this year, including the Senate race. And, you know, a lot of these races, there's not a lot of people to switch over once they get past the Senate seat, or so the governor's seat. But, you know, the Spence campaign, the gubernatorial campaign, Dave Spence, who's a businessman up in St. Louis, they were really hoping for Bruner to win, John Bruner, because he was a businessman. It'd be this message. The whole ticket is a former businessman, right? With Akin on the ticket, that makes it difficult for them, because Spence doesn't want to talk about, you know, social conservative issues. Jay Nixon is beating him in the polls. Jay Nixon's a Democrat governor, but he's running like an independent. That he doesn't say Democrat as TV yet. He says independent, but he's on the Democratic ticket. So this is who this guy's running against. And it's a challenge for him now, because, you know, the week before this happened, they were all on a bus together campaigning the state. They called it their victory tour after the primary. Now they can't do that after the party is disavowed against the candidacy. So it's rough for them to run with a statewide ticket whenever basically the whole party establishment here disowned their candidate. Now, what else is interesting is the four candidates who are not Todd Akin have not talked about this issue at all. They, you know, they've been able to avoid any public comment on this issue. For good reason. I mean, they don't know how it's going to end up. You know, while the party leadership is kind of privately and in the press tried to push him out, the candidates sharing the ballot with him have been quiet. With the exception of Mitt Romney, who's running a national race, Mitt Romney was one of the second people, I think, to urge Todd Akin to get out of this race, which shows how big of a challenge this is for the whole ballot and not just Todd Akin's race.
Unbelievable. So really, it's just shaking politics, the very foundation of everything political that everyone knew even a week ago, completely up in that state, hasn't it?
It was a huge shakeup. If you would have asked me 2 weeks ago if I thought Claire McCaskill would have any shot of being ahead of her Republican opponent, I would have laughed at you, because that's just how this environment is in this state. Will Claire McCaskill win this race by 10 points? I don't think so. I don't think there's any chance. That's not how the state Missouri is. This is going to be a close race, but this, you know, having this big of an election lead, whether it be 10 points or 2 points this early in the race, is a big win for Claire McCaskill, because Akin has damage control to do. And whenever he's on the defense, whenever he's not talking about the economy, when he's not talking about health care law, which is pretty unpopular here in Missouri, whenever he's talking about, you know, these social issues and these funding issues, or Missourians probably disagree with him, you know, that makes it rough. Now, Claire McCaskill, while Todd Akin was dealing with all of this mess this week, she was touring the state talking about veterans' issues. She was talking about her record on veterans' issues, which is pretty uncontroversial. I mean, that's like talking about cotton candy at preschool. I mean, you're not going to get a lot of booze when you start talking about veterans' issues. She's in a and the fact that she was able to do that for a week and not have to be on the defensive of anything, while Todd Akin was spending money on TV defending himself from comments he made, unforced errors. While he was defending himself from an unforced error, she was turning around the face on her RV talking about veterans' issues. That's what she wants to be talking about. His job as a candidate is to make her talk about things she doesn't want to talk about. And so every time she gets to talk about veterans' issues, next week she's going to be talking about contracting reform and issues she's worked with extensively with people like Jim Webb, the modern-day Truman Commission is what they call it. She's winning when she's talking about those issues, and that's not a good place for Todd Akin to be.
Wow, just unreal. With that, I'll throw it back to David for some more questions. David?
Yeah, and I'm going to stay on the Senate race for a second. Eli, you mentioned the polling, and probably the next day after these comments on Monday, maybe Tuesday morning, Public Policy Polling had a poll that showed that Todd Akin was still winning, and a lot of Republicans and conservatives charged that he oversampled Republicans to show that Akin was falsely strong. Then Rasmussen Report came up with a poll that showed that Akin was losing by at least 10, and also Mitt Romney was now losing the state. And that was, and then, of course, that got charged that he had oversampled Democrats, and there's no way that Romney was losing the state. Now, towards the end of the week, the St. Louis Post-Dispatch did a poll with Mason Dixon, showed that McCaskill was leading. I don't think it was still 10 points. And Romney was leading. Maybe and the lead did shrink from the last time they polled. Do you really think there was any trying to work the poll by either the Democratic or Republican polling firm, or it just happened to be how it worked out?
I don't know. I don't know. That's an interesting question. The polls in this race from both those two firms, Home Policy and Rasmussen, have been terribly inconsistent for basically the last 6 months. That being said, you know, the Todd Akin should be able to beat Claire McCaskill more than that, by more than 1 point. And the fact that she's within the margin, you know, that says a lot about Todd Akin's candidacy right now. He's in a rough spot. Now, if you take either of these other polls, you know, there's a poll that came out, you mentioned the Post-Dispatch, there was a Rasmussen saying 10. There was a poll that came out today from, I can't remember the firm name, but it was 2 points. So if it's anywhere in between, if she's ahead by 2 to 10 points, if I had bet, there's probably, I think it'd be fair to say that she's probably ahead right now. If she's ahead by 2 to 10 points, it's not a good place for Todd Akin to be in because he has to make up ground. Claire McCaskill is one of the most vulnerable incumbent Democratic senators this cycle. I talked to somebody with Crossroads, and they described her as, before this whole Akin issue, as the low-hanging fruit. That's why they were spending so much money here. Now these groups like Crossroads, American Crossroads and the National Republican Senatorial Committee are afraid to pull all of their money. They haven't pulled it yet, which is kind of interesting. There's $10 million still set up on TV. They've threatened to pull it, try to force Akin out. They haven't pulled it yet. But if they pulled a dime of that, that hurts Todd Akin because he needs every single dime of that because he's not raising a lot of money. He raised $200,000 this week, which would be good if he was running for, like, state rep. But he's not. He's running for United States Senate, and he raised $200,000 this week. Whenever Claire McCaskill probably raised, you know, more than $1 million off this comment. You know, this is not going the way Republicans thought it was going to go. Whenever they were trying to, you know, figure out their Senate map this year about who they could knock off to get the majority. Claire McCaskill is more competitive than anybody thought she was going to be at this time, at this same stage of the race, and that's a problem for Todd Akin.
Yeah, Eli, you actually answered my next question, which was about fundraising. It's almost like you can predict, so I'll skip on from that, and we'll go ahead and move off the Senate race, because there's other questions that will come out of if McCaskill wins and all that. But we've got, I guess, 6 years to discuss that. So we'll move on to race this year. My next question, you mentioned Jay Nixon, governor. And, of course, it's a terrible time to be a governor because no states have money. The federal government's had to cut back some of the stimulus spending that kind of helped states out a few years ago. Obviously, almost every state, maybe North Dakota and a few others, was standing and had to cut back. But yet, Jay Dixon stayed popular in a trending state. How's he done this?
You know, there's a Republican legislature, and you know, they are kind of a check and balance on each other. You know, he has walked that line very closely. Now, Missouri, we have a balanced budget amendment, so we have to have a balanced budget. So he can run television ads saying that he signed a balanced budget every single year since being elected. People like that in Missouri. You know, we have a AAA credit rating. We've had it for, you know, 30 or 40 years. And he gets to run television ads. As the United States lost its AAA credit rating, Missouri's kept it. That makes for a good TV ad. He's running as an independent leader in Missouri. That's his whole thing. Now, his opponent, Dave Spence, St. Louis businessman, he worked for Alpha Packaging. They make, like, plastic bottles. He's running on the jobs. That's his big stick. He drives around in a big bus or a big campaign RV that says jobs for Missouri. And his whole thing is talking about the unemployment numbers. He's getting a lot of funding from the RGA, the Republican Governors Association, who thinks that if Missouri goes far enough for Mitt Romney, they have a real shot in this race. But the problem is, as you mentioned, Jay Nixon has maintained his popularity pretty well. You know, he was governor in 2011, whenever the tornado hit Joplin, which is a very conservative area. But when you talk to people down there, they don't have a lot of problems with him right now. They don't think of a lot of things to pick on him for right now after the work that he did down there. He's found ways to work with conservatives on a lot of issues, whether it be the auto industry in the state, whether it be, you know, opposing some EPA regulations nationally. He's found a way to walk that line into to come off as an independent leader. Now, you know, he's vetoed things like contraception mandate, and insurance. You know, the Republicans in the legislature were trying to do basically a blunt amendment here in Missouri. He vetoed that. He's taken a lot of heat for that. He's stood up to some conservatives on issues like there's right to work, and these other issues that are, you know, Republicans are really trying to push to the state level. And that's where Dave Spence feels like he has a shot. He's really pushed for right to work. He's really pushed for some tort reforms. And this is his whole, you know, getting Missouri back to work plan. But, you know, that race really hinges on the fact that there's a tough environment. It's an interesting environment. It's a hard campaign environment now with this just awkward ticket. It's an awkward ticket now with Todd Akin after the party system about it, which makes, you know, it makes for a rough race for Dave Spence.
Yeah. Well, I tell you what, we could continue on Jay Nixon questions, governor race questions, or I'm going to give Tim and Kat freedom to move to something different if they choose. Tim, why don't you take the first question in this round?
Yes, sir. With the, shall we say, reset as a result of what happened last Sunday, what is your feeling about where the presidential race stands now? Is this still Mitt Romney's state to lose,
no, absolutely,
or
absolutely.
Is it tightening?
I cannot imagine Missouri voting for Barack Obama. You know, it came within a few thousand votes in 2008, but the environment is just so much differently in the state now. You know, I think healthcare is a big deal. I think the healthcare law is a huge deal, and it's something that Missourians are going to hold against President Obama. You know, Missourians voted in 2010, like 71% against the individual mandate. And then on the ballot in November, there's going to be a provision regarding the healthcare exchanges, which is also, you know, one of those issues where, you know, the Republicans feel like they have a big opportunity to, you know, pull votes. So, you know, I don't know. I think that it's very clear that Mitt Romney probably has the state.
Okay. Catherine, any questions?
Hey, Eli. I just always like to ask about the state of the Democratic Party in any state where we talk to anyone. So how is it in Missouri?
They are – I think they're happy after this week. I think that they feel like they have a renewed shot. You know, that Senate race was kind of their big battle. And now they feel like they have a fighting chance at it, which is kind of bringing them together. You know, Claire McCaskill's kind of running her own campaign while the rest of the tickets campaigning together, which I think works. I think they're all okay with it. But, you know, I think the Democratic Party is really coming together in the state behind them.
Well, that's good to hear because, you know, there's a lot of bad news in party politics around the country. So it's nice to hear that. I mean, this is certainly would be a unifying event because it does give the senator a little better odds, hopefully. I don't have any other questions. I'm sure David has more, so I'll pass it back over to him.
Yeah, Eli, I do. And usually we're forward-looking, but I want to do a little bit of postscript, some analysis. Y'all had an interesting House race in the St. Louis area. Two incumbents went up against each other, Representative Clay, who comes from, I guess, a political family, and Russ Carnahan, who comes from a political family with his mother and father serving in statewide office. They ran against each other, and it really ended up not being very close. Why was that race not closer than it was?
Because it was Lacey Clay's district. And he'd been there, his family had been there forever. That was a rough race for us trying him. You know, his family had been in Concord, had been in Missouri politics for a really long time, and he was running on his name ID, his last name. And Lacey Clay had just been representing that district. His family had been representing that particular district for so long that there was just a name ID issue at that point. And I think also there was a racial issue there. It was a predominantly black district. Lacey Clay's African American member. His father was a founding member of the Congressional Black Caucus. So I think the name ID issue for Clay, as well as the racial factor, is kind of what kept him in control of his seat.
Yeah, well, then why did Russ Carnahan run if, I mean, it seems like if it was such bad dynamics that he's not going to get out of the 30% range, it is the other incumbent's district. Why don't you see that ahead of time and either wait your you know, look at another race, wait it out a little bit, find a different office to run? Why was it have to be Congress in this seat this year?
Well, I think he felt like he had a shot. How they cut the lines was it was, you know, part of his old district became part of the new Clay district. So I think between that and between his family's name, he felt like he had a shot. I also think whenever he, you know, signed the dotted line, he didn't feel like the party establishment would get behind Lacey Clay. Here in Missouri, Jay Nixon, governor, endorsed Lacey Clay just a couple weeks after the filing. You know, a lot of the labor groups got behind Clay pretty early on. In the African American paper there, which is very influential in that district behind Clay, obviously. So I don't know that Russ Carnahan saw that coming, but I felt he was also angry because, you know, there were some stories written early in the redistricting process about how Clay and Cleaver, Lacey Clay and Emanuel Cleaver, you know, got some urge to black Democrats in the state house to get behind the Republican map that cut out Russ Carnahan's district. So I think there was a little bit of just like, he ran in spite of Lacey Clay almost, thinking that there may be a shot. But I don't think he expected the party establishment to come out so strongly in support of Clay.
Yeah, I mean, there's a race, I guess, that was similar several cycles back in Georgia where you had two Republicans. One Republican, Bob Barr, saw that his district was going to be more of a swing district and tougher to win, and he looked across Metro Atlanta and saw this district that was just 95% Republican. I mean, just a no district. But it was mainly this other congressman, John Linder's district, tried to do that. Everybody thought it was going to be this big battle, and Linder won by a lot more than people thought. So it sounds like a Democratic version of that. You mentioned there were five statewide races on the ballot. We've talked about Senate. We've talked about governor. You don't have to go to the other three, but what are some of the better races of those statewide ones?
Yeah, there are about a couple minutes left. There's the state treasurer race, there's an attorney general race, and there's a secretary of state race. The state treasurer and the attorney general, there's two Democratic opponents or incumbents. being challenged by two Republicans. The Attorney General, Chris Coster, who's a really, he used to be a Republican. He switched over in 2008 to the Democratic ticket. He got elected himself Attorney General. He's being challenged by the St. Louis Republican activist named Ed Martin. Ed Martin ran for Senate this year, and then he dropped out. And he ran for House this year, and then he dropped out. And then he ran for Attorney General, and he got his party's nomination for Attorney General this year. So this it was, you know, third time's the charm for Ed Martin. He's got his party's nomination for Attorney General against Chris Coster, who's a very well-funded Democrat, because he still has some donors in the Republican Party, which is where all the money is in Missouri. Cole McNary, he's a state representative. He's running for state treasurer against Clinton Zweifel. That's really a non-interesting race, to be honest with you. I shouldn't say that publicly, but it's just really not an interesting race. That's going to be that race is going to come down to the rest of the ticket. There's also a lieutenant governor's race, with Lieutenant Governor Peter Kinder being challenged by the former state auditor Susan Moskey, who lost her seat in 2010. And then there is a Secretary of State race. There's two state representatives, one conservative from Southwest Missouri named Shane Schiller. He's running for Secretary of State on the issue of voter ID. And then his opponent is a Democrat named Jason Kander from Kansas City. And he is a former, he's a state rep now in Kansas City. He's a lawyer. He's also a former special ops officer who served in the intelligence service in Iraq. So it's kind of interesting. He's talked about military voting. He's talked about, you know, keeping the office nonpartisan, and that's kind of been his big deal. But these races, I think, really hinge on the rest of the, on the top of the ticket, from the presidential race down to the governor's race to the Senate race. And again, this Todd Akin thing makes it awkward. They can't all run together as a ticket right now without this awkward like gap of not having Todd Akin with them.
Yeah, well, Eli, it's been great having you on. Before you go, is there anything on Politics Mo that we should look for, or our listeners should look at?
Keep watching the Senate race. I think there's a lot of news to be made still in the Senate race in Missouri. This race is going to be one of the closest watch races in the country, especially now that Claire McCaskill is as competitive as she is. Republicans nationally, like I said, thought this is the one, the easy one to knock off, and that's shifted this week. That's the big fallout from the Akin deal. Claire McCaskill is a lot harder to beat this week than she was a week ago. So keep an eye on that.
Yeah, well, Eli, I have a feeling we'll ask you back because Missouri is going to continue to stay on the front burner. I think the last time we did our rankings, we all had it in the top three states as far as political interest. So keep up the good work.
Great. Thank you for having me. Good to be here.
Thank you, Eli.
Yep.
Yes, that was Eli Yoki of Politics Mo. Our Politic Mo, I apologize. I think I keep adding the S. And I think, Tim, when I sent you all the link earlier today, I added the S. And you have to go to Politic Mo. And that's my bad. But I bet if you search Missouri politics in Google, and, of course, we Google, we don't Bing, because if you heard the show about 2 weeks ago, you know, nothing against Bing. I really don't get why Bing is not a Democratic thing, according to that map we saw. Anyway, if you looked at it, probably the number one search for political news in Missouri is going to be Eli's site. So I don't think you'd have to hunt too hard to find it, even when we add an extra S's. Well, let's kind of transition back to Georgia. They had some runoffs. I didn't have any runoffs. Tim, I think you did. Catherine, you might have.
Yep.
But I don't think we had the interesting races. And I don't think we had the saddest race. That would have been something I would have been able to vote on my first election or two when I lived in Clayton County. Victor Hill won re-election. If people don't know about Victor Hill, and you're probably thinking, why in the world are they talking about a suburban Atlanta County sheriff's race? This guy is under indictment, was turned out by the voters of Clayton County for what seemed to be, and I'm looking, you know, 95 miles away, seemed to be a really professional sheriff in Kim Kimbrough. And yet, in the runoff, Victor Hill managed to win election back to the seat, but may never serve if he's convicted. And I have a funny feeling this will move up the trial so they can get this thing resolved one way or another before he takes off the seat. Catherine, you're a little closer to Clayton County, so you get the call on this one. What did you make of this race?
I don't know what to make of this race, honestly. I think it was probably name recognition and getting the vote out. I think they probably had a pretty good GOTV effort going on there, and they just got their people out. And I think name recognition helps, too. Whether it's good or bad. You know, we always say that, you know, whether it's good or bad, just the fact that the name is recognized helps. So.
Yeah, I mean, but Tim, I've heard of Rob Blagojevich, and I've heard of Tom DeLay.
Yep,
and I know not, I was thinking about saying somebody else, but that wouldn't be a big deal because they were committing other crimes. But political crimes he has. I've heard of these people, but I know better than to vote for him. What happened?
Well, yeah, you're right. He's facing 37 felony charges, and you figure if there's that many, maybe one or two of them might be real from when he was sheriff before. But there were three incumbents on the primary ballot down there in Clayton County. All three incumbents lost. That was the common thread. He got elected probably even though of these outstanding charges. He's going on trial in November. The voters that were talked to by the press about this saw him as a guy who got results from before. They are not happy with the present powers that be in Clayton County. Like the head of the commission got beat. A couple of others did. And I think it was an anti-incumbent thing that got him his victory, especially among female voters who have a large majority, I understand, there in the primary in Clayton County.
Yeah, Ralph Woley also lost. Eldrin Bell lost. And so I think there is something to the anti-incumbent, but not all incumbents are created equal. And actually, I like Eldrin Bell. But now I will say there was a rumor that came there that he was going to give away the land and the houses around Lake Spivey. And for those of you that don't know about Clayton County, that's the most affluent area in the county. And I can't fathom that anybody gives away any land in this in time. I mean, it seems like our board decided 100 years ago in counties and states, everything else. I don't know if we're shifted these days. But more importantly, you just don't, particularly when you're a more impoverished county like Clayton is nowadays, you don't give away good tax dollars. I mean, that's a good tax base all around Lake Spivey. So I had to think that rumor was false. But if somebody believes it when they vote, it counts.
That's right.
Well, let's go ahead and see the other big race, and that would have been the runoff in Georgia 9. We saw polls that showed this thing between Collins and Martha Zoller being nip and tuck, but it wasn't. Collins just pulled away. That was probably good news for Nathan Deal and Zell Millers and other political leaders in Northeast Georgia. Catherine, were you at all surprised by that result or the margin or anything?
I didn't follow that race that closely, but I think it sort of gives us gave Tea Party a little bit of pause because you know, Martha Zoller had, you know, Sarah Palin, these people come in to support her, you know, significantly. So I don't know if it indicates a weakness with the party of tea, as some people refer to it, or if it's just the strength of our state leadership and the support that they gave her.
It was another in the history of Georgia not electing females. And we have seen and time again, if somebody is going to write a political science dissertation and they want to do it about the state of Georgia, look at the woeful record of Georgia electing female candidates, be they Democrat or Republican, since the United States' first female senator. I mean, Georgia led the way with Rebecca Felton, and since then, it's been, I won't say downhill, it's been nowhere. And this is just another one of these situations.
Especially the Republican Party in this state has been a party of white males. Now, it just has. I mean, there's no other way to put it. And if they're writing a post-mortem on this election, they've got to include that in there, because I've got to think that's got to be part of it. And the other part is what you've already alluded to, and Catherine alluded to, and that's the fact that pretty much the establishment won this time. Everybody, yeah, from the governor to Zell Miller and everybody else, came out and campaigned for this guy, and it helped him.
Yeah, I mean, and recently the high-profile races have been like Karen Handel and then now Martha Zoller. But, I mean, I'm not going to lay this defeat totally at the Republicans. You have Kathy Cox. You have Mary Margaret Oliver. Kathy Steiner,
yeah,
going further back. I mean, the Democratic Party, for whatever reason, even
that's
though
true,
Democrats depend far more on female voters, has been no better.
Kathy Cox was the Secretary of State. She did get elected statewide, so, you know.
She did, and that was a lower office, and Karen Handel got elected Secretary of State.
That's right.
Kathy Cox with a K, school superintendent, Linda Shrinko before her. So, I mean, there has been some breakthrough. And my goodness, what, 52% of the voting or the population in Georgia is female. So, I mean, it would almost be impossible not to have some wins here and there. But when it comes to getting bigger wins, that's where the problem's been.
Yeah, we've a ways to go. There's no doubt about that.
Well, Catherine, if you didn't have runoff elections on your ballot, you were certainly around some. What were some of the Atlanta area runoffs that you took attention to?
Well, I was paying attention to a couple of races, the Gail Buckner, Gail Davenport race. You know, Gail Buckner, the perennial candidate who drops out, you know, leaves her Senate seat, leaves her representative seat to run for state Secretary of State, then runs again and wins her Senate seat back, then drops out again to run for Secretary of State. And she did not prevail this time. Gail Davenport, as the incumbent in a new district, a changed district, did prevail, which was I was happy about. I'm a big fan of Gail Davenport's. And then there was a funny race in Cobb County that I was paying attention to, and actually was at the headquarters that night. A young woman named Lisa Cupid running as against a standard bearer, I guess, of Cobb County named Thompson, prevailed quite well. She got like 75% of the vote in a county commission seat. So I was excited about that. She's a young African American, quite dynamic, quite, you know, smart and progressive. So I'm looking forward to sort of watching her career take off. She's very young. And those were the main ones that I was really paying attention to.
I mean, Lisa Cupid, great name. I mean, knowing much about the race, that's just a good thing to start with. Well, Tim, we're going to be fair. We're not going to be population biased. We know that you had some multiple races to vote on in Chattooga County. If you want to talk about him, be our guest.
Yeah, well, actually, we had one huge runoff up here, and it was for sheriff, and two straight elections. Now we've had a runoff in the sheriff's race. And in two straight elections, the incumbent sheriff has been beaten in that runoff, and beaten soundly. It happened again this year. There were several hundred very excited people that turned out at the courthouse, which Chattooga, as anyone up this way knows, is an old-school county, and they still do things like that. People still congregate at the courthouse on election night, and they close off the side street, and everybody stands in the street, and somebody comes out and announces results, or they put them on a board. One time we even went high tech, and the local TV station put up a monitor, and they were on the air there, but that doesn't happen often. But it was an interesting thing to watch, and it was just American politics, Norman Rockwell style. I wish everybody could experience it one time.
Well, Tim, if they're going through sheriffs that fast, or citizens that fast, get you a gun and a badge, and you might get your turning.
Well, it's like a little of these little counties in Georgia, David. The sheriff's position is one that's very desirable, and it generally draws multiple candidates, even if the sheriff's pretty popular. So,
Yeah, I guess a little different than my county, where Tim Burkhalter, probably the most popular Democrat in Floyd County, if I had to guess.
Yeah.
Well, let's move around to some other things. It seems like with just a few minutes, talking about this Washington Post fix, word clouds are talking about the way they broke down who really makes up the party, we wouldn't have a good shot at. And if you hadn't looked at the fix this week, I think it was one of the better weeks for the people at Washington Post. Go ahead and take a look at those, because a lot of the visuals are much better looked at than described. But let's go ahead and take a cue from Catherine. It is a big week for Florida. There was a race down there where a Republican got involved in a Democratic primary to defeat Joe Garcia. Catherine, you found this fascinating. Tell us what you gleaned from it.
Well, apparently, from what the newspaper article that I read, the Republican candidate was paying for mailers for the Democrat and paying in cash, and it was all very suspicious, but it doesn't seem like there's any wide concern about it. It didn't sound like there were any charges being filed. It just seemed like an interesting strategy to spend $40,000 of your own, or approximately, I don't know, it was something like between $30,000 and $40,000 of your own campaign money in hopes of having another a Democrat win. It was just, I thought, awfully strange.
Yeah.
Did I get that right?
I think a lot of that's right. And I think playbook in the future may be when you can pick your constituents and then from there try to pick your opponent, because that's not the only place this is happening, right, Tim?
No, it's not. It's I just wonder how far this thing in Florida is going to go. I personally have never heard of anybody paying for mailers with cash. Why?
Oh, yeah, they said
they
never heard
of it. Well, one and only reason I can think of is that whoever's doing that does not want anyone to know who it is that's doing it. If it turns out that money was unreported or falsely reported, oh, boy, we could really have something going on down there. But I just don't know if this will go anywhere. And the reason I don't think that it might is because the representative who might have done this is in a party who controls that state.
Right, exactly.
So, I mean, where
yeah.
could it go? Unless the Justice Department or somebody got in on it. So.
Yeah, well, guys, we've gotten a lot of topics covered. We didn't get, of course, half our list covered, but that's usual when we get good guests like Eli Yokley coming on. Just listen up next week for the post-RNC Cubs design, and that's on what else we'll have as guests. I know, and I believe the ninth, looking ahead, Dr. John Sides with a new book has gone ahead and confirmed for the show. So if you hadn't seen about his new book, you can get a few free chapters on Amazon Kindle and a few other places. So check that out so you can read the material before we have him in class, if you will. But this has been the Cubs Spine for tonight.
Good night, guys. Thanks.
Good night.